Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Now we have a special guest today. We have Chuck from the research team on, but this is part two, everybody, of a five-part mini-series that Nepsis is doing on why knowing what you own and why you own it is so important. Now, the first one, we talked a lot about emotions, and this one, we're going to dive into some more really, really fun stuff. So, Mark, why don't you take it away?
Appreciate it, Matt. Always good to have you. And of course, we've done podcasts in the past with Chuck, our head of research. Head of research team here at Nepsis, Chuck Etzweiler. We are in the midst of, as you mentioned, preparing a five-part series. This is part two of the series. And really what we really want to do is what I would refer to as getting back to the basics of investing and the power of your emotions and the power of clarity. As we aptly say often, can you put a price on clarity? And it's interesting. I had an interview the other day, Matt, I think you'll find interesting, with a broker dealer, and the broker dealer was asking me why I don't have a composite of historical returns and why I don't use benchmarks. And I said, thank you for asking such a great question. I said, because returns are historical. They don't matter. And the one thing, you know, and I went through that whole thing we've talked about in other podcasts, and he said, well, if I'm one of your clients, how do I know if I'm doing a good job or not? And I said to the broker dealer, I don't remember the last time one of your advisor's clients left Nepsis. So it's been at least 7 or 8 years. So that to me is probably a pretty good indication your clients are happy with what's happening. And I think a lot of it has to do with the power of clarity and knowing what you own and why you own it. So our research team, headed by Chuck, has done a lot of work over the years. As you know, Matt, Chuck has been by my side now for probably about 14, 15 years. And when I first started working with Chuck, I had to spend some time explaining clarity to him and the whole process and put away his technical indicators and everything else and know what it meant to be a business owner and invest in great businesses over time. So I'm glad to have Chuck here. Chuck's done a lot of work. I'll try to do my best, Matt, and you should try to do your best to help Chuck not go too deep in the weeds because he is the head of research. And research guys love to go deep in the weeds, so we'll try to maintain that. But Chuck, thanks for joining us today. Do you you want to say hello and kick us off?
I do, Mark, and I may be your greatest convert, right? The greatest converts are those who were the most skeptical to begin with, which I was. But boy, this is just a great time to be with you and to certainly go through why it is important to know what you own and why you own it, right? We're in episode two already, huh? We only got a couple more to go here.
Yes, and thank you for your kind words. I'm not giving you a raise.
You got it. That's okay. But here's what I thought we'd do, Mark, if it's okay with you, is maybe we can do kind of a quick overview of episode one and tie the two together, and then we'll get into this. So you've talked about this for years, and certainly it bodes right into our thesis, the Dalbar study, right? This business consulting firm out of Boston, Massachusetts, yes, does what they call the QAIB, the qualitative analysis of investor behavior. And what was interesting when they did the 2020 study, which of course included the COVID mini crash, if you will. And basically, they came to the conclusion that the greatest impediment to one not reaching their own personal investment goals is using emotion in the decision-making process. So we talked a little bit about that. We talked about how you eradicate emotion, but we really didn't get into what that main emotion is. So we're going to tie in this broad concept of emotion, and we're going to define that emotion as fear. And then what we're going to try to do, Mark, is make the case that fear is the antithesis of clarity. And clarity is certainly all about knowledge and understanding, where fear is about what we're going to use this word, ambiguity, or something right, being opaque. So that's going to be the main thrust of episode two here. And we're going to talk about how one can eradicate fear from the process.
Beautiful. I love it. By the way, just, you know, Matt, as you know, we have spent and do spend a lot of time, money, resources, putting together content and communicating with our clients and prospective clients, what Chuck is referring to right there, which is this idea of ultimate clarity. And so fear definitely is one of those biggest things. So Chuck, you're nailing it as usual.
Yeah. Hey, thank you so much. And you know, it's interesting. And Mark and I talk about this quite frequently. Matt, you've heard us say this, that our industry definitely goes along with the theme that emotion is something that one shouldn't have in the investment process. But they define emotion, greed, and fear. Certainly those that are out there that have greed, meaning say greed is something where you want to succeed on the backs of others, right? And I know there's folks that are out there, but the common day investor, doesn't, in our estimation, run from the emotion of greed. It's two components of fear. So maybe we can talk about this, Mark, at first. So the first fear is, of course, the fear of loss. You define this too, right? Because you've dealt with individual clients for years. The paper statement with a red number or a minus sign on it doesn't mean loss. There's only a loss, and you've taught me this too, when you do what? You got it. You got to sell something before there's an actual loss. So yeah. People conflate loss with running out of money, becoming destitute. Everything I've worked for my entire life is going to be lost.
Right.
I guess I understand that. There's a second thing that is really even a greater component, Mark, and we've talked about this too. It's the fear of missing out, or FOMO, right? It's got its own acronym.
Absolutely.
And this is what we're kind of talking about in the green room ahead of time, right? Where we were just mentioning this. It's when others are earning more than you are. So how do you base this comparison? If your neighbor or your 401k is earning more, you fear that you're missing out on something, because again, the understanding and the clarity isn't there, right? So it's fear of loss and FOMO.
Well, I think part of this is rooted in the idea of volatility. A lot of stuff that I read, people are taught that volatility is bad. People are taught that volatility inhibits your ability to be successful, because people have preconceived notions that their portfolio values should go up every day. I've said this 100 times, and a lot of what we're going to say in this five-part series, you know, Matt said, well, shoot, man, you talk about this stuff all the time. Well, that's true, because we believe that repetition is the spice of life. At the end of the day, volatility creates opportunity. And I'm sitting here looking, it's middle of August, just about, of 2021. We're watching markets kind of move slightly higher, but it's a very bifurcated market. It's a very different market. And of course, we don't invest in the market. We invest in great businesses over time. But I'm praying for a 20% pullback. We need a pullback.
Yeah.
Because everything just keeps going up. I like to buy things on sale. But the reason why I feel that way, and the reason why we preach this all the time, is that we want to eradicate the fear of what is happening in your portfolio. Look, if you got 5, 10, 15, 20 mutual funds or exchange traded funds in your portfolio, I'd be fearful too. I have no idea what's going on in there and what the money managers are doing. So anyway, I'm off my soapbox.
That was so excellent, because when you say, how do you eradicate or overcome fear? And we're going to get to that, because certainly it's clarity, but let's kind of break this down. A lot of this is going to sound common sense, right? So you can overcome fear through three things: faith, trust, and confidence. So we're going to get to the confidence one, but you think about faith, your spiritual beliefs. Trust would be more of a legal way to overcome fear. You set up a trust, so there's parameters. But confidence is a way to overcome fear. So it's kind of this personal way of doing it. So the big question is, how do you obtain confidence? And we're going to make the case through psychological studies, just in life in general. Confidence is earned, first of all, right? So it takes time, but it comes through knowledge and understanding. And the simple example, Mark, we talked about sitting down in a chair, right? You and I don't even think about when we do it. Why? Because we believe that the engineer has designed the chair that it's not going to fall apart. So I have some knowledge and understanding. I have a background. And then when I've sat on chairs before, that there's confidence earned in the fact that it's not going to fall apart. And so the question is, what's the opposite of knowledge and understanding? which what's called clarity is ambiguity. And it's kind of a nasty word, yet it's pervasive, Mark, right? In our industry, it's almost like our industry thrives in ambiguous data. It's incredible to me.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, so let's get to this definition here. Again, not to be wonky, but I want to make sure that it sometimes, if we, everyone remembers English class, whatever it was, seventh grade, we talked about something called a synonym, which was
a parallel
to ambiguity. So it sounds like this lofty word, but to hear some of the synonyms, Mark, to it. So doubtfulness, uncertainty, unclear, indefinite. Now, if I was an investor and I was deemed to have those characteristics in my decision-making process, it wouldn't sound like it would turn out too well. And I think that's what the Dalbar study is saying, because people have doubtfulness, they're uncertain, they don't get the results that they had intended to.
Right. And well, remember too, expectations is a part of that too, so, which I'm sure we'll cover later.
Absolutely. But. And you know, it's interesting that you say it, because it gets right to this study. So if people want this study, they certainly can have access to it. This was not a study done regarding investments, but it was done at Vanderbilt University, of course, in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was an excellent psychological survey. It was called Hopes and Fears, the Conflicting Effects of Risk and Ambiguity. And in essence, it basically said that fear becomes heightened and elevated when ambiguity is present. Everyone kind of understands this, right? And we've used this example, Mark, we talked about it before, of a hurricane or a storm that's forthcoming versus an unexpected or an earthquake. An earthquake's always unexpected. So right. What's the difference, right? When you're going through these, the hurricane or the storm, you can track it, you understand the strength of it, you know how to protect yourself. So you have a knowledge of something that's forthcoming, so you don't fear it as much. An earthquake comes out of nowhere. And if anybody's ever been through an earthquake, you have no idea what to do at that point in time. So this in the investment world, Mark, just correct me if I'm wrong here, is the same thing. If you say you want to pray for a 20% pullback, so you're almost praying for the earthquake to happen because you know what you're going to do in the midst of it.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think COVID's a great example of that.
Exactly.
Right? And I do think I had this conversation maybe with Matt on the last podcast or someone else. Maybe it was someone in my research team. This idea of what COVID did for investing, most pullbacks, most downturns take time. They can be, you know, corrections can be 3 months, 6 months. They could be a year. They could be 2 years if you take into account 9/11 to March of 2000 to really, it wasn't until 2003. It was almost 2.5 years before markets started moving higher. You look at the financial crisis, really started breaking down in late 07 and didn't end until first quarter of 2009. But COVID was 2 months.
Yeah.
Maybe. So you had pullbacks like you had at 9/11. And the financial crisis, both taking well over 12 months, to one that was just as big, over 2 months. And I think that the one lesson people learned from that is that they remember when the correction and the crash started, and they're already starting to see the benefits of strategic cost averaging. They're already seeing the benefits of the buy discipline and the sell discipline that Nepsis uses. And, you know, in the financial crisis, it's longer term. It's like you're sick longer. Yeah. Whereas COVID, people were not only concerned about the COVID, they really weren't paying attention to their money because COVID was a health issue, not a financial issue or a black swan event. It was a health issue. So people started realizing, hey, you know what? My life is more important than my money. And they really didn't pay attention to how bad the pullback was. But all of a sudden, when they look back and see how everything went down, and then all of a sudden it went back up. And of course, the rest of 2020, 2021 has been fantastic. People realize, wow, maybe it is true. Volatility is powerful. Volatility is beneficial. And of course, those all do get back to getting rid of ambiguity.
No doubt about it. It's so great. And remember when we looked at those, we went back and there were some parallel ones to COVID. It was the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was one, right, which on the brink of nuclear war, destruction that could simply have destroyed humankind. And then the other one was in the mid-60s when there was the upheaval at the Democratic Convention. We certainly also had, at the same time, the Vietnam War, and those were non-financial, as you said, and yet they happened so swiftly and quickly that people didn't have a process in place to react. Many people sold into those and certainly were very upset that they did after
absolutely
it was all said and done.
Yes.
So, and that was great that you brought that up, because this study, there was hopes and fears, the conflicting effects of risk ambiguity. They developed out of this, Mark, something called the ambiguity effect. So it's one of these behavioral biases that basically says that the lack of information, people will, in essence, emote fear, which of course sounds logical, but what they will do is they will default to something always where they believe a favorable outcome is known over the unknown. So
hence the reason why they sell, they go to cash, they know it's sitting in their cash and their cash is safe.
You got it. It's so amazing because it not only happens in life, it happens certainly in investing. I think it's heightened in investing, and that's where we've talked about this before. So
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we've used, Mark, in this, which is kind of neat, is that famous quote that President Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, FDR, as we've called him in history, and that that passionate speech that he gave in front of Congress, I think it was the first time he was elected, and it was his certainly State of the Union in 1932. We've all heard this. You know,
were you born in 32?
You know, add 30 years to that. I read this in the history books, but and actually I've seen, a taped version of it. Not that old.
All right. You guys can't be beating each other up like that on the podcast. That's not good, Mark. That was a low blow. Chuck.
Thanks for stepping in, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you know, I had to step in.
It was a compliment because he's so dang smart.
Yeah. There you go. Well, thank you. See, Mark's always great to bring it back to that. Thank you.
For my pleasure. My pleasure.
So we all know that FDR, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. But here was the back end of that, which we have forgotten about. And I want to just read this. So, because Mark, I want you to make a comment on this, because this is the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Yes, but here's what he said after this. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. How does that back end not relate? To what we are doing about what when the pullbacks are nameless, they're unreasoned, it's unjustified, it parallels people, right? Where they can convert that retreat into advance.
That is the power of strategic cost averaging right there. But see, most investors don't have the ability to strategic cost average. And again, the ability to strategically continually invest in a great business over time. If you don't even know what you own and why you own it, if you don't even know what businesses you're invested in, how are you able to go strategic cost average? You're not. You're just putting your money into a big bucket. And that's where people lack clarity in understanding of what really is happening with their money. That's why some investors say, well, I don't invest in the stock market. It's too much risk. And I always tell people, you realize you don't invest in the stock market. You invest in businesses. The stock market is nothing more than the greatest tool ever created to bring buyers and sellers of businesses together. And clearly through history, that has been the case. And so that speech unequivocally has parallels to the idea of the power of clarity, knowing what you own, why you own it, and your ability to continually invest in those great businesses over time. So without question, good move.
Yeah, absolutely. There. And I love how you rallied back to that piece on business ownership, because we have three tenets, right, that just broadly speaking, business owners in general have. So I'll just say successful business owners have.
Right.
And I'm going to mention these and I want you to speak to it, because you're certainly the individual that developed these. It's almost like, I know you're huge in the music. It's like when the person who sang the song is saying to the writer, hey, this is what you meant. You were writing the lyrics, right? Only the writer knows that. But anyway, So here's the firm. So the first thing is any successful business owner, right, has this deep conviction and knowledge of why they are in business at first, right? Why did they develop this business? They have that firm grasp and understanding. I know that sounds so conventional in its knowledge, but is that not correct? That deep conviction of why they're doing what they're doing.
Well, it goes back to your term about confidence, right? You start your own business, you run your own business, where the successes and the failures of your business are. I shouldn't call them failures. I should say successes and opportunities. And so business owners, whether they realize it or not, they're continually invested in their business. And when the economy goes down by 30% or 40%, you have a COVID, you have a financial crisis, whatever the case may be, you're going to try to keep your business afloat as much as possible. You're going to adjust. You're going to do some buy discipline. You're going to do some sell discipline. You're going to rezone, or what's the word I'm looking for? You're going to move your business pieces around to position you, because you're always thinking in your head as a business owner, well, this is just a downturn in the economy. The economy will rebound. It always has. So what I need to do during this downturn with my business is what? I need to prepare my business for when the economy expands again. Yes. I need to invest in my business. That's exactly what we do during corrections. That's exactly what we do when we have companies that are down 20, 30, 40, 50%. If the long-term fundamentals haven't changed, I'm going to go continually invest in that business because I know the economy is going to turn and it's going to come back. That's why I always say that when you continually invest in something, you're doing it because the long-term fundamentals haven't changed.
Exactly. And it gets to this piece, Mark, where research has shown, and we've spoke about this before, when you have that foundational knowledge of what you can and cannot control, it greatly reduces fear, like when the unexpected occurs. So what you just said, people ask this all the time, when's the pullback going to happen? Our answer is, I have no idea. I can't predict the future. But I do know this, when the pullback happens,
right,
I know what I will be doing, right? And that's what you were just saying. The business owner doesn't know when calamity is going to come, but they know what they're going to do when it does come.
Yeah. It's like Pavlov's. Is it the Pavlov theory?
Dog.
He rings the bell and the dog goes and gets his food, right?
Yes.
The end of the year, the bell rings and everyone comes for their food, i.e. the predictions for the coming year. What do you think the stock market's going to do? It is futile to project what you think, quote unquote, markets or economies are going to do, because there's too many variables that can alter the prediction. And that's why we do our predictions every year, which of course I think
I love it
pretty good. But the reality is you can't predict the future. But what you can predict is the processes you use and how they react to things that are happening, so that you can have what we often refer to as process before progress.
Amen. And I love that. And it takes us to the second component here of the three of the business owners. So we talk about this, the conviction of why they're in business, what they do when peril strikes. How about this one is kind of a characteristic, we'll call it stick-to-itiveness, right? We talk about athletes that have that, right? When the competition intensifies or their operation appears to, they don't give in or quit. Our business has a word for it. They call it capitulation. But tell me a little bit about that. We have this happen all the time. I can't go through another 2008, or I can't go through this. It's people give up again because of this lack of knowledge of truly why they're in business and what they're doing.
Right. Well, I think the key there is discipline. When you when people say, I can't go through that again, my response is, why can't you? Because look at your portfolio now. Look how you're positioned now for the future. Why can't you go through it again? Especially if you see the activity going on. Matt and I did a podcast back during COVID, and I had told Matt that one of our clients called his advisor and said, tell Mark to quit making me so much money, because they were looking at their portfolio. They were looking at the companies they own. They saw what they bought the companies at. They saw how the companies were rebounding and how they were having a direct impact on their portfolio, despite all the negativity going on. Let's face it, especially in this news cycle we're in, everyone focuses on the negative stuff. No one focuses on the opportunity. Investing is 100% about opportunity. But to have that ability to discern between opportunity and fear, you have to have a process. And in order to have a process, you have to have clarity of that process. And once you do that, then you understand how the clarity allows you to execute on that process and therefore get progress at the same time. Discipline.
which is an excellent thing. And I want to backtrack just to one thing you said here quickly before we get to number three, and we're going to be wrapping it up, is that this, we use a fancy word for it, set of words, it's called the fallacy of composition, which basically says, hey, look, if I don't outperform and beat my benchmark every quarter, or if not every component in the portfolio is up every quarter, you use this great analogy about a vehicle, right? What do we know for people who aren't mechanics? You get in, you press the button, you turn the key on, and all you know is that the car is going to transfer you to A and B. You're going to press the brakes, you're going to work. The battery is going to ignite the powertrain, et cetera.
Yep.
Just relate that to the composition of a portfolio when you're disciplined, how you know how those components work together. I always like the way you describe that.
Sure. Well, it's rare that you have every component of your portfolio working at the same way at the same time. That's why they call it diversification and asset allocation. And you frankly don't want to have all your pieces working together at one time, because then you're not in a position to take advantage of buying stuff on sale. If everything is going up, and maybe it's not going up as much as you want, you don't have an opportunity to buy stuff on sale. You don't have an opportunity to buy things at a discount. So it's kind of like your vehicle, right? Your vehicle has heat in it, right? But in the middle of the summer, are you using the heat in your car? No, you're using the air conditioning in your car. So there are times you're going to use the heat in your car. There's times you're going to use the air conditioning in your car. In your portfolio, there are times that sector A or sector B is going to be doing better or worse than sector C or D. But then that's when your sell discipline comes in. You take some profit where profit is due, and you reallocate to your other positions. Very similar to that automobile analogy where you use your air conditioning at one time, and then another time you use your heat.
Absolutely. I love that. And the last one is going to fit perfectly into this, because we talk about it quite frequently in our firm. But the investment process, the decision-making that goes on behind the scenes, and how business owners have an understanding, which is called, of their vision statement, their overall mission, and how that acts as a rudder, again, when they're in the decision-making process on how to pivot. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how that links into the Clarity roadmap and people's personal life goals and better wealth, better life, which is so huge, because it is about investing what we do, but there's a broader concept of clarity that this actually leads to, which brings people peace of mind, I think. I mean, don't you? I mean, that's what we're about at the end of the day. It's not performance, it's that piece, correct?
Right. Well, we trademarked the phrase, the road to nepsis, right? The road to ultimate clarity. We're all on a journey to ultimate clarity. And we're all, you know, our life is a roadmap. And as you're traveling down the road, you go down different roads, different things happen, but you have an end goal in mind. But you have to have a map to do that. You have to have a roadmap to do that. And to execute on that map, you also have to have a certain level of clarity to help you take advantage of shortcuts. Let's say, you know, now these navigation systems, they'll tell you if there's road construction on your phone. So it gives you an alternative route to take your vehicle on your journey. Well, portfolio management and the Clarity Roadmap is just like that. It gives you the ability to continually assess in real time what is happening and take advantage of opportunities to make things go better for you.
Absolutely. So very well said. I think it gets back to the conclusion remarks here that I think is just huge. So again, we're talking about how emotion is just so detrimental to the investment decision-making process. Fear is really at the heart of that, right? It's the fear, not only of missing out, but the fear of loss. And I just go back to that FDR speech. And think about at the time when he had spoken to the country, I believe that the market at that point was down nearly 90%. I think it bottomed in February of 1932. So you just think about that. It started in 29, how long it lasted. Yeah. So here he's speaking to the country, right? The worst economic fallout.
Right.
He basically says, what, you know, the only thing that we have to fear, it's fear itself, but then goes on to that unreasoned, unjustified. So here the market's down 90%, and here people, the unemployment rate's at 25%, I think, at that time, the highest ever. And he's calling this unreasoned and unjustified. And if you go back and look at that, if people had invested at that point in time, if they had an astute ability to understand and had clarity.
Extreme wealth.
They did unbelievably well, right? Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible how those have that component, even in the worst peril that this country has faced, which is called economically.
Yep, for sure. Good stuff. All right, Matt, I think we've given people a little bit of content today to stir on.
I have to say, as a history fan, I never knew the second part of that quote. And I love that you brought that up, Chuck. That's so powerful. And Mark, as you just kind of said there, you know, unbelievable wealth when people invest at the right time and really understand what is going on, that changes the entire game. So everybody, this was part two of a five-part miniseries on why knowing what you own and why you own it is so important. Obviously, if you haven't listened to this first podcast in this one, episode one of this five-part series, please go back. It's really important for you to understand all of this contextually, because what Mark and Chuck are going to do is they're going to build on this, right? Build on the understanding. But this one was really powerful, guys. And I want everybody listening to go back and re-listen to this, because I guarantee that you missed some of the subtleties. And one of them is the idea that the reason you fear things is because you fear the unknown. And when you have ultimate clarity, there isn't that unknown. So if you've not subscribed to this podcast, make sure you click that subscribe button below. That way, every time we come out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And make sure that you stay tuned to episode number 3, 4, and 5 of this five-part miniseries. For everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran and Chuck. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.